Thank you. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan on community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations ahead for this Wednesday, October 1st. The Juno Symphony kicks off its season with their new music director this weekend. We meet Brad Hogarth and talk about this weekend's program, Courage and Connection. It's October, and nothing says boo better than a production of Dracula. It's Juno Ghostlight Theater with some spooky fun. We chat with the cast about this comedic take on a classic that's opening this weekend. First Friday rolls on this October. We have some updates from the Juno Douglas City Museum. And Garden Talk this week gets us prepared for the cold. It's Juno Afternoon on KTOO, made possible with your support. Donate and become a member at ktoo.org. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That right there is a little Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2. The Juno Symphony kicks off its season this weekend with new music director Brad Hogarth, who secured the job after a season-long search last year from the Symphony. This weekend, the program is called Courage and Connection and features that Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2, plus additional music by Dvorak and others. The others we'll hear in just a second. We'll have Brad explain that, what that's all about. I am joined now in the studio by music director Brad Hogarth and executive director Charlotte Truitt. Gunnath Cheesh, Brad, welcome. Congratulations on securing the victory.
Thank you so much. It is an honor to be here. Thank
Excellent. You. We'll find out a little bit more about you two here in just a second. And Charlotte, welcome back. Gunnath Cheesh. So let me start with you, Charlotte.
Okay.
Why did Brad get the job?
Well, we had four amazing candidates, and they all did wonderful work with the orchestra, and the musicians and the board made the final selection in a vote. And so that was the choice of the musicians and board, with the input from the audience, gave feedback as well. So it was a unanimous decision, very clear decision, and we're happy to be moving into this new season.
Did the musicians offer feedback too, in terms of how they worked with the conductor and stuff?
Yeah. Yes. So there was musician surveys, audience surveys, and a full packet of material that was provided to all of the voting members of the body, and they arrived at their final decision, and here we are.
Okay, great. Yes. So, Brad, I know we had you on the show, I think it was a long time ago. But tell us, remind us again about you, where you're from, why, you know, we'll start with that. Where are you from, and what other, because I know a lot of the music directors have jobs at other places, and so what are those for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm a professor of conducting at San Francisco State University, but I also hold other positions. I conduct at the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco. I conduct a bit with the Monterey Symphony. I also conduct an organization called the Art House Collective. We do large scale like ballets in very unique spaces, I'll say. And then, you know, as a musician, I work all over the place. So it could be with, you know, San Francisco Ballet or Symphony, or it could be, you know, in any other city or state. But most of my work is in San Francisco, but I'm so excited to be spending more time in Southeast Alaska.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what instruments do you play as a musician?
So I play trumpet. That's my main instrument when I'm not conducting. So,
okay, yeah. Great. And what got you into conducting?
That's a great question. So I actually started conducting because I've always loved teaching. So even like when I was in high school, I was, you know, teaching private trumpet lessons to beginning trumpet students. And then that turned into sort of, you know, teaching group classes. And as, you know, a musician, if you're teaching a big class, you generally have to conduct. And then in my undergraduate, I was doing a performance degree in trumpet, but I was also doing a music ed degree. And so as part of that music ed training I conducted. And, you know, also I've always just been sort of interested in, you know, as a trumpet player, I get to play really, really wonderful melodies and great lines, but I was always interested in knowing like everybody else's parts as well. So even in high school, I was like checking out the score, or like, you know, the where I've got everybody's part in front of me, or I was arranging music for different ensembles and always kind of like getting under the hood, if you will, with the ensemble. So it's sort of been a really lifelong, you know, ever since I've been a musician, I've wanted to sort of be a part of the bigger picture of it. So then it just kind of went from there. You know, I did a lot of teaching and then now much more, you know, professional conducting and things like that. And it sort of happened organically.
Yeah. That's really cool. And I know it's not a unique model here in Juneau, but I would assume that that background helps you with sort of the all-volunteer idea of the Juneau Symphony.
Yeah, absolutely. I work a lot with, you know, every like age range and every setup of an organization, from absolute beginners to total, like 100% professional musicians. So I'm comfortable in just about every scenario. So,
yeah. And yeah. I'm not saying, I want to make sure I'm clear on this, just because it's all volunteer doesn't mean that it's not professional level, right?
Absolutely.
Like that's just the difference of like, if people aren't doing it full time necessarily is how it works. So when they come in, maybe, you know, it's just an interesting model, right? So that's kind of cool. We love the Juneau Symphony. So it's really cool. So let's talk about this program. Did you select this program? Were you hired in time to be able to select the season and all that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So actually, as part of the search process, once we got to know the orchestra with our set afterwards, we made sort of a mock season.
Oh, okay.
Just so kind of like, you know, I know the orchestra now, what would you like to program with us? So we had, let's say, just like an outline, like a pretty detailed outline for what we'd like to do for the season, but then it required some tweaking.
Of course, you know? always it does. Season planning is never easy, right, Charlotte?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, for sure. So why the Rachmaninoff Symphony number 2?
So Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony is sort of a beacon in the repertoire. It's known to be like the most lush, beautiful, romantic, lose yourself in the sound, just like the
we were hearing that piece. Yeah,
the clip that you played, I mean, it's just absolute peak romantic. You know, his emotions were just on full display, and there's just nothing more beautiful than that third movement. So I knew that this first set together, I wanted to really feature the orchestra, so in every way. So the Rachmaninoff both featured some solos, but it's a lot of like really big ensemble playing together, and you really get a feel for what the full orchestra can do with all of the members playing, and just all the lush texture and beautiful combinations of instruments and things like that. So I really wanted to focus on like the orchestra being on display in that way.
Absolutely. And just so we know, we're talking, this is Juneau Afternoon, we're talking with the Juneau Symphony about Courage and Connection, which is this weekend. Charlotte, just before we talk about the Dvorak and the other piece, give us the rundown of when, where, and how we get information.
Okay, well, all the information is on our website, Juneau Symphony. JunoSymphony.org. We have two concerts. One is Saturday night at Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. The concert starts at 7:30, but Brad will be doing a pre-concert conversation at 6:30 if you want to come and hear a little bit more about the program. And then we do it again on Sunday. And Sunday's pre-concert talk is at 2, and the concert is at 3.
Okay, great. And so a couple of the other pieces in the repertoire, as it were, is there's a Dvorak that you're going to be doing. Tell us a little bit about what you chose there.
Yeah, so again, I wanted to sort of like feature the orchestra in a big way. And also this first concert is about, you know, community, the courage and connection sort of being the title here. But I was just always, I've always been struck when I come to Southeast Alaska, just like how warm and embracing the community is. And I wanted to sort of start with some pieces that embodied that. So this first one we're going to play is Dvorak's Carnival Overture. And it was actually originally conceived as a triptych. There's three overtures, and they're originally called Nature, Life, and Love, but he later changed the title. So the Life one that he wrote is this Carnival one. So I thought, what better way to start the season than with a party? So we've got just like a, you know, a big symphonic party with some lovely solos from English horn and violin, some really sweet moments in the middle, but just a big party. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's a really great way to get the season started. Just tons of energy right up front, thrilling, you know, finale to it. It's about a 9-minute overture, and just a really nice way to get started.
That sounds like it. So it's going to be emotional, a party, and then we've got this third piece that we're going to play a little bit from here. Tell me a little bit about this Valerie Coleman piece.
Yeah, so Valerie Coleman is a wonderful living composer. She's quite prolific, and she's a flute player in addition to being a composer. And actually, her group, Imani Winds, was in Juno, I believe, either last year or the year before.
Yeah.
And so this is a piece, the version of the piece you're going to hear is actually for that quintet that, that she started. And so the piece is called Umoja, which is an anthem of unity, and Umoja is the Swahili word for unity.
Okay.
And so this piece has come through a lot of iterations. It actually, I believe, started as just a piece for women's chorus. It kind of takes into account a lot of the traditional call and response from a lot of different musical traditions. And then she wrote it for woodwind quintet. And I think this version that we're going to hear is perfect. It's a little bit shorter. It gets right to it. It's immediately bright, exciting, embracing. And so again, I wanted to sort of bring something that brought the community together. So this is about unity. This is about courage. This is about all these things.
That's so great. It's courage and connection. We're going to listen to this as we go out today. Brad Hogarth, congratulations again. Welcome
to
Juno. Hopefully
so much.
You get to spend some additional time here in addition to the time you're here to work with the symphony. That's great. And Charlotte, it's this weekend. It's so Saturday at 7 p.m.
7:30.
That's the 4th, right?
7:30.
And 6:30 for a pre-talk with Brad.
That's right.
And then Sunday at 3.
With the pre-talk at
2. Okay. And of course, you can find all the details at JunoSymphony.org. It's Courage and Connection. This is Valerie Coleman with the Umaji piece. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTO. Gunatish for being here. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinach John Martin. And the word this week is ch'ak.
Ch'ak.
That means eagle. And here's a sentence.
Yan dakin ch'ak.
The eagle is flying there. Let's hear it again.
Ch'ak.
Eagle. Gunash Chish Tuchune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinach John Martin was Dakdain Tan and a child of a Kaguantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe, Skagway, and attended Gonzaga University.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Try to do my best Dracula.
Ooh, I love it.
This is Juno Afternoon. From your listeners, I can't do it. From your listeners supported public media station KTOO, I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Well, October is here. Halloween candy is in the stores. Decorations are beginning to appear on homes. And it seems perfectly fitting that Juno Ghost Light Theater opens Dracula. A comedy. I've also been watching a lot of Traitors recently. And Alan Cunningham, do you know this show, Traitors?
Yeah.
I haven't seen
and
it.
And just the way he says Traitors every time. It's such, he's so good in that. He's a great host. Anyway, they're opening Dracula, a comedy of terrors, this weekend at the Thunder Mountain School Theater. You can get full details on the internets at junoghostlight.com. And I'm pleased that we can hear more from the actors of the show. Let's see who we have in the studio here today. I'm going to start over here. I have Hedy Laverne. Gunath Chish, Wasiti. How are you, Hedy?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. And then I have Val Kissel. Gunath Chish.
Hello, hello.
Hi, welcome. And then I have Travis Clark Morris, who is playing the title character.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I felt with that music, we needed the cape and everything. So, okay, so let's start with, Hedy, I know you're also like on the board. So let's talk with why you all chose Dracula, especially this particular version, the subtitle, A Comedy of Terrors.
Yeah, so I think it was about 2 years ago, this version of the play went viral on TikTok and Instagram. There was a reel that was just reshared constantly. So it came to us that way. We saw this. We're like, this is our sense of humor. So it's very Mel Brooks. It's very just heightened, silly, but it is still the story that we all know. It does stay true to the story, which is one of the fun parts about it.
Okay. And who are you playing?
I'm playing, so this show, almost everyone plays more than one character.
Oh,
so
okay.
I play Dr. Van Helsing.
Okay.
And I also play Mina, who is Dracula's first victim.
Oh, mm-hmm. Dracula's first victim.
Sorry.
And then Val, who do you play?
Yes, I play a Transylvanian carriage driver, Lucy, the love interest of Dracula.
One of them.
And Kitty, the maid.
The Kitty, the maid. And then Travis, who do you play?
Yeah, so as Hedy mentioned, it's broken up into five actors, and there is this conceit at the very beginning that they're actors putting on the story of Dracula.
Oh, okay.
So that's when we have these quick changes that happen on stage with a wig change or a costume change. It's all very campy. It's all very theatrical. But I play Actor 5, who stays in the Dracula role the entire play.
I see. So that's kind of fun. Is it like... is the conceit like it's Juno Ghostlight Theater? Is it like you all and then you're stepping in, or are they other characters because like things happen during the show?
Yeah, it's a bit of other characters. So, you know, actor 3 and actor 4, you know, have a little side, you know, storyline going on. But it's not an omnipresent thing. It's just kind of something to get a small cast to put on a big show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because there's a few shows that do that. I mean, the one with the what's the classic one with the maid?
Ooh, you're testing our theater history
Knowledge.
Noises Off. Thank you. Yeah. I just couldn't remember the name.
Yeah,
but like,
I love that.
That
one.
Also has, because then they go backstage.
There's a backstage element.
It's the actors, but it's the characters, and then 39 Steps, which I directed years ago, Perseverance, like the same. It's not the same. That one's not exactly the same, but we kind of used that conceit a little bit in there.
But you have that meta theatrical component, right? So it's a story within a story, and it shows some of the strings of the puppetry.
Yeah.
And I think that in some way brings the audience into the room with us. So it's not just a passive watching, but they're part of the conceit of the storytelling.
And
right?
It gives you the opportunity to like break the fourth wall or do whatever you need to do.
We shatter it for a moment. It begins, and then we continue to break it all throughout.
Yes.
Okay, so before we get too much further in, Hedy, give me the details of when you open, how long you run, and where do we get info?
Okay, so we open on Friday, October 3rd. We are running 3 weekends, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, October 3rd through October 19th.
Okay.
Each Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee, and also each Sunday we are giving back 20% of our ticket sales to different causes each weekend.
Oh, cool.
And those are also pay-as-you-can, so we're trying to encourage people to come on Sundays to give back if they want to help donate. And then it is happening at Thunder Mountain Auditorium. And was there another part of
that? No, I think that's it. Oh, where do you get more info?
And more info at JunoGhostLight.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram. We post a lot on there. So
yeah, you guys are really great with the social media. Val, tell me about the other actors who aren't here with us today that are in the show.
Yes. So we have Roblin Gray Davis.
Oh, he's perfect for this kind of show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely hilarious. And matched in hilarity by Felix D.A. Just the whole cast. Just very, very funny. We laugh a lot in rehearsal. Those are the other people.
And then Travis, give me your director. Who's directing this?
Yes, Grace Lee is our fearless leader. And we also have Ellie Peisel-Davis as our stage manager and a wonderful cast. I think we have more or equal to the amount of people running backstage as we do on stage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because as you'll see, our set designers, lighting designers, everybody, costume designer put in a lot. It's a really big lift. So it takes a village to get this thing up on its feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I guess with the fast changes, right? I mean, is it that kind of show? Like, is it high energy and all that kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Are you all
show.
Tired?
We're tired, and it's a sweaty show.
You have to kind of refuse collapse all the way through. And speaking of the cape, this cape is fully wool, and it's about 40 pounds.
What?
So it's got a great drape, but if I hit someone with it, it almost knocks them out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was just thinking, Hedy, just for your play committee, I don't know if it's even available yet, but this is also reminding me of that show, The Play That Goes Wrong, the new one.
Yes.
I don't know when that's available. But
it is available. I did see it last time I was in New York, and it's one that I would love to do, but that set, you have to be able to. Yeah, it collapses mid-show.
Oh my gosh.
And then act two, it's up, and then the curtains open, and then right back down. So we'll figure that out someday, but we need a little bit more time.
Yeah, I got you.
Support the arts.
So tell me a little bit about the rehearsal process. How did you go about, was there struggles in finding the campiness, or was that easy, or is there any hurdles that you had to overcome?
I think with this team, everybody brings their own unique style of comedy, but I believe they cast, we're very, very fortunate. They cast a great group of people that has inherent knack in timing and their own kind of comedy, be it physical, be it timing, be it, you know, like all kinds of different ways that we express and bring our own kind of funny. I suppose if Grace were in the room, she'd probably say wrangling the like wild cats.
Yeah, this cast, the names, it sounds like a little bit of,
there's a lot of clowning that would go on, a lot of trying to build that complicité, that kind of ensemble. So I imagine trying to wrangle us was maybe one of the hurdles. But in terms of finding the funny and developing the camp, I think there was a whole smorgasbord to play from, and it was more about cutting the fat out and choosing what to use.
I see. Okay, that sounds kind of cool. And you mentioned that there's a lot of designers and costume stuff. Do you want to mention, Hetty, who's like on the behind the scenes part of this doing work?
It's a big group. Let's see. Sarah Wallace is our sound designer. Kainoa Thole is our lighting designer.
Cool.
Yeah, he actually did lighting design for the last show that we did. So and that was a smaller show. So this is a big one that he's tackling.
Because he's like what?
15.
15.
Yeah. He's busy and he's always tired, but he's doing great.
Awesome. So, he's rocking it.
Yeah, he's doing wonderful. And our props and props were, and set design were a group effort. Amanda Kraft and Gina Morris were working on that. And yeah, it's amazing. We have a huge group.
Kate Berge doing costumes.
Thank you. Costumes.
Right. So that's our set, costumes, props,
lights,
sound.
Mm-hmm. Did we get everybody?
And then we've got an amazing backstage.
Yes.
And if I don't know if I can get all the names and last names
you
so quick.
You can probably find it online.
Well, yes.
Vow with the save there.
Thanks for
It'll
that.
All you be in the program. I promise
online.
You that.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a blast. Have you guys been? It seems like you guys are having a lot of fun with this one.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, we open this Friday, so we're in it.
Mm-hmm. And we're tired. Yeah. But we're excited.
That's one of the things, too, is that, you know, Juno Ghostlight set this up so that we did have more rehearsal time, but it was spread out over a longer period of time. So about the same amount of time to work on it as a usual piece. But we had our weekends to be able to try and recoup because everyone's working a full-time job.
Sure.
And then this is our second job. And it's a bit high octane. So everybody's been able to bring their full selves, but we've also been running on very little sleep.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge with local projects, even, you know, whatever it is, theater, music, whatever it might be outside of your regular job that we all have to have, is how do you also then survive? And as we get older, it doesn't get easier, that's for sure.
That's true.
So, Travis, about playing Dracula, there have been so many people, famous people, and just different productions and you know, so much that goes into that character.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the take in this particular scripting, and then how did you like dig that out, or what kind of take are you having on it?
Yeah. So the script, they give you a pretty specific image. It's essentially a pansexual rock star is the kind of image that they give for this Dracula. So he is attracted to everything that moves, and especially if it makes him feel better about himself. I feel like the narcissism is on high display. It's a bit of a peacock opportunity. But then I've been drawn, especially this year, I guess, to Bela Lugosi's Dracula, and that big and broad accent, and the way that he creates atmosphere with the timing, the physicality, the magic, and the way that in that film they did this, the atmosphere, the slowness of the gestures, the taking of the time, the focus of the energy in the eyes, and that connection with his victims. So playing with the kind of Mick Jagger, Prince, rock star version, and then also that big, broad gestural magic and the wonderful vocal dance of the Dracula. Right?
Now, Val and Travis, you are a couple. And you're playing lovers in this as well as other characters that Val plays. But what I'm asking Val is, what's the home life like with him playing Dracula? Is he walking around doing the accent all the time?
Insufferable.
God. Yeah, well, it's probably insufferable both ways because I have three different accents, and mm-hmm. then I also have a lot of ideas about things. I go, oh, drop, what if we just worked on this one moment, and like, what if you picked me up and I crawled down your back? What yeah. if we, what if you did this and came over here like that? So, you know, the
I
separation
see.
Of work life and theater, it doesn't
exist.
It doesn't exist.
They just
exist.
Added a new bit last night that's really funny.
Yeah.
And they were like, where'd you come up? And they were like, oh, we talked about doing it at home.
Last
like,
night at midnight before, yeah, the other night before midnight, before we went to bed.
Yeah, I know. I got home from rehearsal.
She's
like,
I got
working.
A bit I want to work on.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh my it was
God.
Great.
I have to
they
brush my
surprised
teeth.
Us with it.
Brush my teeth. I've been biting people.
I know.
It's great. It's Dracula, a comedy of terrors. It opens this weekend at Thunder Mountain, the school theater there at Thunder Mountain. You can get full details at JunoGhostlight.com. It runs for 3 weeks, 3 weekends, and mm-hmm. Sundays are pay as you can, but also a really cool thing where you're going to donate that money to various different charities and
yes.
such. That's awesome. Hedy Laverne, Val Kissel, and Travis Clark Morris, thank you so much, Gunachich, for coming in and telling us a little about it. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Sounds like it's a lot of fun. Everyone go see it.
Gunachich, thank you so much.
Excellent. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's Mike Lane with this On the Day segment. You can listen to Mike every morning on KTOO's Morning Edition from about 5:30 to 9 in the morning.
From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Wednesday, October 1st. On this day in 1965, Dr. Walter Soboloff was the first guest lecturer at the Juno Douglas High School's new class in Alaska Native Arts and Crafts. The class was the first of its kind in Alaska public schools and was instructed by Peter Bibb in the Industrial Arts Department. Dr. Soboloff gave a background of the importance of arts and crafts in Tlingit culture, stressed the importance of people knowing their culture and the beautiful heritage given them, and gave suggestions for further study. That's a look back at this day in 1965.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a yitin. Jin katka ke jin talk anachaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.
Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. First Friday is upon us once again, and of course that means I'm joined by Juno Douglas City Museum's Kate Ross for a preview of what's going down downtown. Hi, Kate. Gunachich, Shaiyud. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure, as always, to see you. Wasiyati, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's fall. It's October. Let's go. It's first
it's
Friday.
Cold, but now we're getting into the fall first Fridays. Things start to get serious.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is like a last chance opportunity.
It is. We've yeah. had this lovely exhibit up all summer, The Wild Joys, Creating Community Through the Performing Arts. And I've had all these performance hours and this is going to be our last performance hour.
The last one.
The last one for First Friday. And so, yeah, this Friday, First Friday, October 3rd, 4 to 6 is the First Friday full thing. Performances will be between 4:30 and 5:30.
Okay. 4:30 and 5:30.
4:30 and 5:30. And then the exhibit closes in just a couple weeks. So come.
Like middle of October, right?
Middle of October. The 16th is yeah. the last day to see the exhibit. But this is the last performance hour.
Did you all like video them or anything? Or did you just.
We took a couple short videos and some pictures, but we didn't video them. There's no way to.
There's no, it's not, it doesn't give it justice, really.
No, you got to come see it surrounded by all these incredible costumes and photographs and artifacts from our performing arts
history.
I mean,
that's the whole point, right? Performing arts, like it's live, it's in living color. You're right there.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's so cool. So this is the last chance this Friday for the live performances, and then the actual exhibit will close in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Okay, great. Now that you have some other fun events that are coming up,
we do.
Tell us a little bit about Patsy Ann for those who may not know.
Yeah, Patsy Ann is our famous, probably the most famous dog in Juneau. If Romeo is our most famous wolf, you know, this is our other famous canine of Juneau.
Yeah, you're starting a war right now.
Listen, we celebrate both at the museum. There's room for everyone.
There's room for everybody. All canines and all.
All canines. So Patsy Ann was the dog who would greet the steamships that came into Juneau. And just kind of local celebrity. There's the statue of her down on the docks.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever been walking down on the docks, that is that statue. And so last year, we decided to have a birthday party for Patsy Ann. So we're going to do that again this year. There's a fantastic book all about Patsy Ann that was written by Tricia Brown, illustrated by Jim Fowler. So there will be a read aloud of that book and then some crafts and activities. So it's kind of a drop-in thing. The read aloud will be at 1 o'clock and the event goes until 3 on Saturday, October 11th.
Okay. And of course, everything we're talking about, you can go to juno.org/museum and the whole calendar is there. You can subscribe to the wonderful news and events newsletter that you all send out by email every month. It gives you everything that's going on. So we're just getting the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a not so silent film. What's this situation?
Yeah, so we're really excited about this. This was a project that was accomplished in part from a grant and aid from the state. And so it's the Stonehouse family who lived in Juneau and Alaska in the 30s, 40s, 50s. We were donated a large collection of 35 millimeter of old film movies. Home movies, and we got this grant to digitize them.
Oh.
And so there's this whole series of really, really cool old home movies from all kinds of little slices of life from Juneau back then.
I love that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so what we have done is taken kind of a best of the best of those from different seasons, different events, different places around town, and compiled them into one 30-minute long video. And as people may be aware of, or if you've gone before, the Gold Town Nickelodeon does a not so silent film series where they have local musicians come in and play live music to go along to old movies that were, you know, before the talkies.
What
right?
a perfect marriage.
Yeah. So we have these silent home movies, and we will have the duo. They're calling themselves the Dark Ages this time. It's Bob Banghart and Dave Hunsaker.
Oh my gosh.
We'll be playing live music to accompany these. And then we're also really excited. We will have Pat Race is putting together a selection of some shorts from previous Jump film festivals that are also kind of centered around home movies and Alaska.
Yeah.
And so we'll be presenting those first and then the Not So Silent Stonehouse family.
Yeah, I
movies.
Wonder. The Jump Festival has been on my brain recently, right? Like it needs to come around again soon.
Yeah, they've brought it back kind of slowly over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I know their next one is going to be in the spring. I think Pat will probably talk a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll get him on the show to
about how
that.
To do that. Yeah, yeah. So we're excited to have these movies from Jump because we have Alaska Day is that weekend. That's kind of why we chose this date. And it's also Home Movie Day I can't remember if it's the 17th or the 18th. But we have both of those things, so it's kind of the perfect time. We're celebrating Alaska Day and Home Movie Day at the same
time. There's a day for everything, isn't there?
There's a day for everything.
There's a day for everything. I love it. And I love the little image that you have here is from the Derby races, right? Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, so the films are really cool. There's all kinds of different stuff. There's stuff from you can see some films from the glacier, which was, you know, back then
much
a lot
bigger.
Closer and bigger. there's wildlife. And there's some things like the 4th of July parades. So there's some really, really fun footage from the 4th of July, from the Soapbox Derby, all kinds of fun stuff.
That That's so cool. And that's on Thursday, October 16th at 7 p.m. And that is at the Gold Town.
It's at the Gold Town and it's free.
And it's free because most of the stuff the museum does is free. Are we on to free admission now?
We're on to free admission.
Yay.
It is winter hours.
It's winter hours. And remind us what the winter hours are.
Winter hours are Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4.
Okay. And you're going to be closed a couple days this month, Friday, October 17th, and Saturday, October 18th, for Alaska Day.
For Alaska Day, yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And you're not usually open on Mondays anyway for Indigenous Peoples Day. You'll be
correct.
Also not around. But you're not open that day because you're only open Tuesday through Saturday.
Yeah.
So that's great. And then last month you were here. Mm-hmm. You teased everyone with the idea of what was going to be for the 12 by 12 community art exhibition. I'm curious, did anybody reach out to you and take a guess?
Oh, I had one guess from one friend, and it was unfortunately not correct. So no one won my super secret surprise.
Oh, man, that's so bad. That's too bad. But now you can officially announce
yes.
it. So tell us a little bit about the title, what people need to do, when they need to start thinking about this.
Yeah, so we're really excited. This year's 12 by 12, which is the annual community art exhibit. It'll be in March and April. And this year, the theme is monochrome in color.
Monochrome in color. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And so taking the idea of doing pieces that are monochrome, but we want to make sure everyone knows that that does not just mean black and white or black and grayscale, but you choose a color, any hue, and within that, you use all the different variations of that color.
Mm.
So your piece as a whole, say it's red, but within that you could have dark burgundies all the way through fuchsia and pinks and all that, just kind of all the variations on red. So choose whatever color you want. You could do grayscale, certainly, if that's what you'd like to do, if you're someone that likes to work in more of a black and white medium.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but the idea is choose a color, any color, but your whole piece should be monochrome.
That is cool. Yeah, because I love that idea that people can pick one color and then kind of, and this the image you have is different images, but they're in the same sort of color palette. And then like one's a cat, but then if you see wheat or if you see some other things, and it really, it can bring out like different aspects of the art. And I guess that would be, I'm not an artist, but like that to me would be like, you know, that's where the subtlety is. That's where the art form is like, what are the images and what is this one color telling us about these
images? Right, right. Yeah. So it can be a lot of fun. I always think of, you know, if you put a constraint on something, some kind of a structure or boundary around something, it can sometimes really free you up to be incredibly creative with what you explore within that boundary.
Yeah. Freedom within the structure.
Mm-hmm.
That is a wonderful phrase.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's not due until mid-February. So people have a few months, and this is a great time to start thinking about it as we head into these darker, cooler months, and people kind of turn inwards, getting a little more, you know, hibernate-y,
stay-at-home-y. Yeah, and we keep saying 12 by 12 by 12 because people can do a 3D version.
Yes, you
right?
can absolutely do 3D. We've had a number of different ways people have done things 3D. Some have been completely 3D, and we've set them on a podium, and some things are 3D coming out from the wall, so it might be within a frame but have 3D elements. So as long as it is within that cube of 12 by 12 by 12,
yeah,
then we'll take it.
But you could just do 12 by 12.
You can do 2D.
It's fine.
2D
is good. Yeah.
But if you want to do by 12.
Yeah, Bo Anderson.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great. All right. And then just before we go, I just wanted to mention that you have, I don't know if you mentioned it at the top there, but for this live performance on this weekend, did you want to highlight some of the groups that are going to be there?
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a couple really, really incredible performers to celebrate the end of our summer exhibit, but also to celebrate that October, so starting today with the first, is Filipino American Heritage Month.
Right.
And so we are going to actually open up with some bagpipers. which is going to be very fun. But then we have a couple of different groups of Filipino dancers. So there's a kids group, there's an adult group, so there will be multiple different dances happening. And we're really, really excited to be working with these Filipino dance groups from PhilCom. We're extremely happy and excited to host them, to celebrate the exhibit, the museum, Filipino American Heritage Month. So we're excited about that. And then we are also going to have a little performance from Colette Costa and Shona Strausser and maybe a couple other surprise musicians.
Awesome.
You'll have to come to the museum to find out.
And that's first Friday at the City Museum from 4 to 6. The live performances will be from 4:30 to 5:30. Of course, everything that we talked about is available at juno.org/museum. Kate Ross, Gwyneth Cheech, did we get everything? Are we good?
I think we got everything. Okay. We'll got more for November, so I'll see you in a month.
We'll see you in a month. And Gwyneth Cheech for being here. Really appreciate it. Up next will be Garden Talk, but first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. Alaska and Iceland have a lot in common. They're both cold, mountainous, and glaciated, and home to hot springs. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, there are 79 thermal springs in Alaska, concentrated on the Alaska Peninsula, the Aleutian Chain, southeast, and the interior near Fairbanks and Ruby. Many of these hot springs are warmed by volcanic activity and the fiery magma always boiling beneath the Earth's crust. Hot springs can be used to fuel power plants. In Iceland, 90% of the country's heating needs are met by geothermal activity. But the Earth's molten interior can also be used to produce the very staff of life. Bread. Icelandic kvetabrög is a moist, sweet, slow-baked rye bread cooked in a wooden cask, or now more commonly, a bucket with a lid, buried near a thermal spring. According to Magnus Nilsson, author of the Nordic Baking Book, the Icelandic countryside is crisscrossed with bubbling holes in the ground that steam with the sweet scent of baking bread and the sulfurous perfume of volcanoes. If you don't have access to the Earth's magmatic heat, you can bake kvetabrög in the oven. Low and slow is key. 12 hours at about 200 degrees in a tightly covered pot. Serve with smoked fish or meat or pickled herring. If you have leftovers, turn them into a soup called brögsúpa. Soak stale bread overnight in water flavored with lemon and raisins. Boil until thick and top with whipped cream. The poet Bill Holm must have had an interesting experience with brögsúpa. In his poem, Bread Soup, an old Icelandic recipe, he pronounces this menu alive as any animal, one that will sing inside you for a long time. Find links to Bill Holm's poem and a recipe for kvetabrög at savorymoment.org from the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska. I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO 104.3 Juno and 91.7 Juno Auk Bay. Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Boston Christopher, and I am here with UAF Cooperative Extension Agent Darren Snyder with today's topic, preparing for the coming cold. Gwyneth Cheech, Ha'igudi, thank you so much, Darren, for coming in. It's a pleasure to see you. Wasiti, how are you today?
I'm good. Gwyneth Cheech for having me. Appreciate
it. Yeah, it's getting colder out there. Like, yeah. It was cold in the studio today. Like, I definitely feel the temperatures dropping.
Yeah. It's a hint. You know, when we have, I don't know if... you got any of those beautiful northern lights that were out last night?
I saw a little bit of it. Yeah.
But that's
the
a good
tail end.
Yeah, that's a good hint that you know when we can see the stars at this late in the season, and when we hear some of these reports of the northern lights, that should give us a hint that that we are definitely going to be feeling some frosts coming in soon.
Mm.
And So again, you know, a few weeks back, I tried to lay down a little bit of like the preparation we can do. Mm-hmm. Now is the time to just be ready for that forecast. Keep an eye out for forecasts that indicate that we're going to have a frost, and especially a lengthy frost, because these clear nights, just, you know, we've lost our blanket those nights of our warming clouds. And that's when it can really drop and really cause some havoc for our gardens.
When does that frost happen? Could it have happened already? Or are we getting close? Or
yeah, we're kind of closing in on the average frost date. It kind of depends where we are in town, but within the next couple of weeks, I'd be surprised if we don't get our first pretty significant frost.
Okay.
And so just kind of being ready for it. I've mentioned in the past some of the strategies, but doesn't hurt to maybe repeat a little bit you know, if we're thinking about our soils, then speaking of blankets, putting what we have for blanketing our soils is generally we call mulches. Mm-hmm. And so it's pretty easy to get a hold of wood chips for free. You can also get the ornamental kind and buy them, but you can get nice free wood chips from folks who are doing tree cutting, so a lot of the side of the road. You can just get some buckets and fill those up and just cover your soils with those, the ones that you're concerned about maybe freezing.
Before the frost happens, this is just a question for my knowledge, but everyone else's too, I guess. But like before the frost happens, is that when we want to have most of the things out of the ground?
Yeah, for the annuals, the harvestable.
Like the carrots and all that stuff we
want to
have?
Yeah, yeah. You don't want them to freeze in the ground. Yeah. You can, depending on your situation, you can mulch them heavily and then and leave them in the ground, especially if you have a cover, either a low hoop or a high hoop over them, mm-hmm. or even some kind of, as we've talked about, a plastic covering over that mulch.
Right.
But the plastic itself, if it's just plastic, it's not going to keep the cold temperatures from freezing deep
and then, in the ground.
I and others have been caught in with that, and it's just a shame because the, you know, once these, you know, if it's potatoes or carrots freeze, then they need to stay frozen, or else once they thaw out, they will start losing their structure and just kind of getting soft.
Yeah, it'd be a sad thing, right, to have your growing season end by forgetting or not being ready. You get distracted for a weekend or so, and then boom, all of a sudden, toast, right?
Yeah. And so getting those things out of the ground that you're going to want to harvest, but also just like your perennials or your bulbs that you've put in the ground. We still have plenty of time to be getting bulbs in the ground, whether they're garlic or any other ornamental bulbs as well.
Mm-hmm.
You generally can, you know, plant them deep enough that you're not too concerned, but it's always best here in this environment to give it a good layer of mulch. We've talked about the seaweed as something that will incorporate right in. If you are using mulch like I've, you know, suggested with the chips, then just expect that you're in the springtime, you're going to be taking those off because you don't want them generally to be part of your growing environment unless you've, you know, plan for that, because there can be issues by having too much, especially like a bark type high carbon mulch on it. The reason, just to be clear on when we're protecting the soil from freezing is also the thawing that occurs. It's the dreaded freeze-thaw cycle that we have here, and it messes with all kinds of plants, from, you know, large trees to our little bulbs and everything else in between. You'll see sometimes the effect of it when you're walking around in nature and you see those crystals coming up, and it's called extruded ice. But that just shows just like multiple freezing events, that kind of the layers of freezing that occur, and just like those ice crystals will force their way up out of the ground, they'll do the same thing with the roots, with the bulbs, and they'll just force it right out of the ground. And and then expose it to thawing out. And just like with those root crops we were talking about, bulbs don't want to be, you know, frozen and unfrozen and frozen and unfrozen. They'll just end up, you know, breaking all those cells and rotting away. So that insulation may not actually prevent in the hardest freezes, prevent them from freezing, but most bulbs have that ability to be frozen and to actually be in those really cold temperatures. But the mulch in this case is actually helping keep them frozen so that they're not going through that, because we will get some of this warm, beautiful sunshine coming down on a day like today, even where it's really cold. It's cool in the shade. I can't really call it cold yet, but it's cool in the shade. But once you're in the sunshine, it is cooking, especially if you've got anything covering, like in a car or a greenhouse in case of growing situations. So it can fluctuate dramatically. And so I'm just trying to kind of like emphasize that we're trying to protect our plants from that swing. If we want to talk about shrubs a little bit, you see a lot of the arborvitae, that those tall, skinny, kind of candle-shaped trees that are evergreens. Those ones can be susceptible to drying and cold winds, so people will cover those with burlap. That's one way of protecting them. If you have a prize one that you want to make sure to protect, that's a good thing to do, is you know, within the next couple of weeks, get that wrapped with burlap. Sometimes if we get caught, we have relatively short falls. We don't have like this extended fall period where the colors of the leaves will change, and then they'll eventually just kind of, you know, fall and blow around and stuff like that. A lot of times, like right now, when we have some of these beautiful maples and other native plants changing colors, we can get surprised and get a frost, or get even ice and snow will come. But if those leaves haven't dropped, then they can accumulate and actually pull the branches down and break them. So it's just something, if you're trying to take care of your plants, pay attention to the stage that they're in. If it looks like they've held on to their leaves, and we're already starting to get some accumulation of snow or ice or something, then taking those leaves off will help protect those branches from falling down and breaking. Gotcha. Some people will even tie some of these branches up loosely so that it just supports it. So even if we have no leaves on the branches, they can still accumulate and get pulled down by the snow and such.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe one more thing before we have to go.
Yeah. You may have seen, may not, but some people will actually paint their, if they've got especially like a fruit tree or something like that, it might not be an ornamental, and so you're not worried, but they'll actually paint white the trunks so that on a hot day in the wintertime, it won't get so heated up that it kind of tricks it into starting flowing sap.
Oh.
And then that cold night comes, because again, like the sunshine comes with cold nights in the wintertime, and so that's like the double whammy. So if they heat up during the day, and then that sap will freeze overnight and split the bark and kill the tree.
That's so great. That. And, of course, there's always more resources available at the UAF Cooperative Extension. You can just Google that. Yeah. That's the best way to do it. They have a whole selection of stuff there. Darren Snyder, thank you so much for joining us again for this edition of Garden Talk. I appreciate you being here. Good to cheese.
Cheese.
Do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Local stories, local events, local connection, made possible by you via your donation and membership at ktoo.org. Gonna cheese. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. And support comes from viewers like you, listeners like you, and Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Have a wonderful Juno Wednesday.